Blog Talk Radio.
In this episode of United Voices with Sherry Saunders, she's broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., reporting on the use of vaccines. It's a vax world. With Sherry is a road warrior for the rights of the oppressed and the manipulated. Good morning, Sherry. How's it going up there?
Well, I tell you, we woke up to a rainy morning in Washington, D.C. today. We've had to make some changes with a rally. We're going to move the 1 p.m. Rally for the Revolution for Truth to the Marriott, which is right down the street from the White House. There's a lot of speakers, and it, well, not knowing what the weather was going to do, with about 20 speakers, they just decided to move it. So that's a bit disappointing. I was hoping to actually speak from the Capitol steps, but I was there on the Capitol steps yesterday watching a lot of groups. There was probably four groups protesting. One thing that I would like to say that I noticed was that the Washington police, the Capitol police, seem to be very professional in how they handle their job. I have not seen such professionalism in police in other cities. When we see rallies or marches and what we see portrayed on TV, obviously that's propaganda, and you know that, Marcus. They're trying to make us look bad or make the march look bad or make somebody look bad. But in this case, they seem to have a good grasp of how to prepare the site and to keep people where they want them. So with that being said, I like what I saw when it came to the police presence. And with the marchers and the rallies themselves, obviously I'm happy to see everybody expressing what they feel needs to be expressed in the nation's capital.
Yeah. So, what are some of the themes that you guys going to hit on today? What are some of the main things?
Well, we have speakers from the March Against Monsanto. So let me start with that. We're going to have a speaker, Tammy Canal, that represents the March Against Monsanto. What she will be speaking about is GMO foods, the aspect of agriculture in our society. The speaker for the Nation of Islam, I believe, will be Tony Muhammad. I hope it's either Tony or Elijah. I apologize. I don't have the name. I believe it's Tony Muhammad will be speaking. And he always has a great speech. His speech in Atlanta was very uplifting in that it gave me information of how our nation has been trying to kill us and the Nation of Islam and brown, white, black, and blue. So he's always going to come with a lot of political information because it sounds like that's where he got his information from. Some of the other speakers, Michelle Ford will be speaking towards the idea, the Revolution for Truth. With all of our different speakers, I'm speaking from the vax military whistleblower standpoint. We have speakers for March Against Monsanto. We have speakers that will speak specifically on vaccines because they work with a vaccine company. We have speakers like RFK Jr., which will probably speak towards the creation and the implementation of this vaccine safety task force. It looks like the speakers that we have are just going to give a rousing speech on what is wrong in the ills in society. And I'm only giving 5 minutes, so I don't know how much I'm going to hit on. But I will say this. I hate to give them a compliment, but Marcus, you know, the police know how to handle it up here. That they're respectful. And the only thing that you cannot do is take a picture of them. They will freak out if you try to take a picture. Just take a picture of the police, and you're fine. You take a picture, they're going to freak out.
I think it's places like all over the country, but it's probably places like you know, remember what happened to us and the Daily Haze down in Alabama.
Right, right.
I think places like that in the backwoods, in the back country, I think that can be a little bit more forceful by trying to stop you from speaking out, by trying to stop you from being an activist. And it's pretty much, you know, like you said up there, it's accepted this is going to happen. They probably don't feel one way or the other, other than these people have a to protest in peace.
Well, I agree with that. Let's start with the people here, those that work here. They seem to be excited to see someone new, someone they haven't seen before. Me and the friends that I came up with have been questioned on what we wanted to speak about, on why we were speaking, and why we came to Washington, D.C. And this is just a regular the guard at the gate, the person behind the counter that gives you the information. These are people that have they work and make this city work. And I can't say that if I go to Birmingham and I'm getting a sandwich across the counter that I'm going to have somebody ask me where I'm from and why I'm here. So the people, the poor, it's very expensive to live here. We spent $24 to park a car for 12 hours. We want to spend $40 today to park our car over close to the White House for this rally. So it's very expensive to live here, and they're still only making $9, $10, $11 an hour. So the culture of this city from its employees is that they're very respectful, and I think that the people who work here see that they're working in the nation's capital, and they use their best. They give it their best go. So I know this is probably not what we were thinking about when starting this show, but I wanted a bit complimentary to what I'm seeing, because I'm usually a negative person, and I always want to go right to that. But in this case, I would like to be complimentary to the people that live and work here in Washington, D.C. They seem to be very accommodating to the groups of people that come in. So with that being said, I don't mind going, we can start talking about the meat of the matter, but to begin this show, I wanted to give thanks that I see respectful and professionalism actions by the police and the people who work in bringing you coffee and bringing your breakfast are very respectful of the city that they live in. And we have seen all nationalities. I have had probably six different countries of people that I've spoken to in just the last 24 hours that they're here working in this city, immigrants, and they are excited to be here. They're excited to have the opportunity to work in the Capitol. And on two of the conversations that I had with these folks, I asked them what it was like to be an immigrant in the nation's capital. And they expressed to me that they knew and understood that everybody in the country is watching. So this guy right here who works as the garage token carrier, he's from country in West Africa, the one I spoke to this morning. And he's concerned. He's concerned that he's done everything he should have done when he got here. He's concerned that he don't have to do anything wrong and someone may hate on him. When he came to this country, he took a job and he's doing his job. And so his take on the immigration thing was, I don't want to be dismissed. I don't want to be overlooked, and I don't want to be oppressed or stepped on for being me here. And I can understand that because, like I said, there's a lot of immigrants working in lower-wage jobs in this community or the nation's capital. So I can't understand why we have such a problem in Congress with understanding immigration rights or understanding maybe perhaps how we need to go about things when the guy who brings you your coffee and the woman who brought you your breakfast work from this country. And you can accept that. And you maybe you don't even think about it because you're so used to getting your breakfast and your coffee. But if you stop and talk to these folks for just a minute, you will understand that they're happy to be here. And they're extremely excited to be working in the nation's capital for very little money. And you have to walk for miles to get to your job because there's no parking garages. So with that being said, you know, when you put your time in like that and your effort, I'm going to give you your props. And so I, you know, that's how I wanted to start the show. I wanted to tell the folks there in Alabama, those that listen to the show, look, this is what I'm seeing in D.C. I'm seeing the people that brings the coffee and the bagels to all of these other folks that's making the decisions is doing the best that they can do to show that those folks that's making the decisions, that these folks on this side of the table can be good Americans. And I hope that others look at it from that point of view.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that there are some places, instead of, you know, you being on the scene and you really the only advocate some of these people have when it comes to vaccine, because you can give a firsthand account and kidnap when it comes to these DHR kidnap cases. And then you and people like the Hayes show up, then all of a sudden, blocking off the court, pushing people back, and then slamming them and hitting them with gag orders, and then threatening to put activists down like yourself to try to gag them. It's great to hear that.
Right.
It's not like that.
Oh, well, me and Terry LaPointe have done a lot of talking, and I can tell you that of the people that we've talked to, and we've brought up either DHR or vaccines, and this is either Congress or Chief of Staff. I mean, anybody, the guy at the table who brought me my dinner, anybody that we've had an opportunity to get to listen to us for 5 minutes, we've told why we are here. And I want you to know that everybody, even Representative Adderholt, who I thought his eyes was going to pop out of his head when I started explaining to him how the Gulf War Syndrome screwed a whole bunch of soldiers because they played a little insurance scam by denying VA benefits to those who got the vaccine injury outside of Iraq or didn't serve actively in war in Iraq. So I explained to him straight to his face that I had just left the Health Committee of the Veteran Affairs that was located in the legislative offices where the congressmen were, and I went in and gave those ladies the what. They gave me a card and said to send an email with my concerns. So I'm told to send an email with my concerns when I just stepped in that room and explained how I knew how you killed 35,000 people with a shot, like I explained it to Representative Adderholt. And I will say that he was quite surprised with the information that I provided, and as Terry said, it looked like his eyes were going to pop out of his head.
Yeah, I know
he did not expect.
Yeah, I know
he did not expect that.
Tell your listeners about some of the people you've met that come from across the country and other places.
Oh my goodness, we have a lot of vendors that have brought in information, and then they're here to educate. One of Voices for Choice was. Voices for Hope, I mean, I may have that name wrong. We were at the dinner last night with them. These volunteers have came, put together, created the signs, put together all of the things needed for a march and a rally. And like this morning we were hoping for a march, but it turned out with the rain. So with the organizations that have attached themselves to VAX, those organizations have showed up. If I wasn't on this phone talking to you, I'm afraid I'll hang up the phone. I would pull up the list of all of the speakers and explain more. And I hate that I don't have it on my phone for the listeners. In fact, I may try it while we're talking. If I lose you, I'll call you back. But the people that we met yesterday came down to this for me and Terry. We got into Luther Strange's office. He listened. He was rushed. He listened. He wanted both me and Terry to get back in touch with his chief of staff, and he directed me to his military liaison and a couple other liaisons. And we sat down with Robert Adderholt for about 30 minutes, and I spoke to his people for another 30, so that's almost an hour that I had with this man. We went into Representative John Lewis's office from Georgia. I wanted to speak to him about the civil rights aspect of these vaccines, the damage that it's done to families. He wasn't in his office, but I was able to reach his chief of staff, and they're interested in what I had to say by tying in the vaccine and the DHR conversation into civil rights violations. So that's why I felt like I needed to see Representative John Lewis from Georgia. all of the – we saw Representative Palmer. He had just flown or was leaving his office when we walked in, so we didn't get to speak to him, but we spoke to his chief of staff. He is a representative out of Alabama. So we spoke to representatives for Terry Sewell, representatives for Gary Palmer, representatives for Shelby, representatives for Senator Shelby. We spoke to Senator Luther Strange, but for only about 5-6 minutes. It was a brief conversation, enough to get him interested in what me and her had to say. And he said he had to rush for time because he did. He was fixing to do an interview for, I guess, CNN because they were in the Capitol building. I popped in to Florida. I cannot remember the representative from Florida. So since I was there and they were right next door to the Alabama, when I popped into his office and spoke to him for just a minute, it was real easy to just walk into an office. And when you walk in, they're going to ask you if you want a bottle of water and why you're there. But it's difficult to catch the legislators because they're so busy. And here in Washington, the legislative building is across the street from the Capitol building. You have to go through underground tunnels or you go, you know, on top. So it's difficult to catch these guys, Marcus. Like, I had the appointment with Adaho at 10:45, but I didn't get in front of him until 11:30. I had to walk across the street to the Capitol building to get that meeting. Originally set in his office. So one thing that people need to understand when they speak to their legislators, you're going to have to work with them. They're not going to make their schedule change for you. So we had to do a lot of running around to get into these offices. But seeing Luther Strange, I will say this. He knew who I was. I stuck my hand out and started shaking his hand when I said my name was Sherry Saunders. And while I'm still shaking his hand, it kind of took him back that he was shaking a hand of Sherry Saunders because he didn't know who I was when I stuck my hand out. So I'm excited to see that Luther Strange had a visible reaction when I said, my name is Sherry Saunders. So that lets me know that somebody told Luther I was coming or told Luther something about me. So that's good to know, Marcus. Like I said, he did a double take. Like, Sherry. Okay.
The work. I know he's probably heard the work that you've done in and around Alabama. I mean, your work speaks for itself. So we both know that they watch and they're keeping tabs. You know, they want to know what you're doing. But they know you're good at done.
I'll tell you. I did. I had a great day of speaking. I felt very confident in these meetings. I felt very confident because my information was true. And the people that I sat in front of, I believe each one of them walked away with a question as to either whether or not this woman is the craziest woman I have ever met, or this woman, if she's telling the truth, then everything I was told was a lie. So that's what I take away from those meetings. I can let you know that Representative Sewell's folks were extremely touched by the stories that we had on DHR. And Representative Sewell is sponsoring and working or helping to sponsor a bill for medical. Well, I don't want to call it medical kidnapping, but she's sponsoring some, helping to sponsor. Sponsors when you write the bill. She's supporting a bill that is right. Doesn't go as far as we need it to go, but it's a step in the right direction. So at least they're starting to push bills that may fix the Hillary Clinton fiasco. But what me and Terry LaPointe specifically asked Robert Adaho on and tried to key him down on was, will you sponsor legislation to repeal the 1997 Hillary Clinton law that created this entire fiasco for DHR and these kids being taken? And he said he would have to do some research. So I certainly hope after 18, 20 years in Congress, he can find the opportunity to do some research on a piece of legislation that has ripped his constituents apart. Many of the constituents that we're hearing, people reaching out to me on these medical kidnap stories, are also located in the 4th Congressional District of Robert Adaho. So I give him, let me just say this, I'm shocked that he didn't realize that there was a problem in his district. But now that he knows that there is a problem in his district, we have to wait and see what he's going to do. So his response was he was going to look into it and research it more. So I'm not certain what that means for Adder Hope, Marcus, but for me, I was disappointed.
Yeah, and he's probably
disappointed because that's all I got.
Yeah, and he's probably disappointing a lot of his supporters back home.
Well, I'm disappointed with him on that, but let me tell you where I'm liking the guy again, because he did give me something. So let me tell the folks, I was going to announce this today at the rally, but this is a radio show, and the people at the rally are probably not listening. So I'll go ahead and announce it to our listeners. This is major. This is huge, and I'm very excited to say that Representative Adderholt would he's going to make a phone call through his department, his office. We'll call Montgomery National Guard, and he, through his office, will support the plan that I spoke to him about, that I have talked to the Alabama National Guard recruiters about and have gotten their support to opt out of these dangerous vaccines through the Alabama National Guard. Now, I can't do nothing right now for Georgia, but the plan that I told Adderholt, that if we can start in the state of Alabama protecting our soldiers, the other 49 states who have soldiers will see that the state of Alabama all of a sudden is protecting their soldiers, and they may want to ask their own legislators to protect them also. So we had to get this in one state. So I'm extremely satisfied that at least he is going to support me in Montgomery with going forth with a vaccine exemption right or policy for the Alabama National Guard, which they can opt out of the experimental vaccines that has been given to soldiers for years that has caused so much damage and horror in the lives of our servicemen and women. So, Marcus, I'm a little angry about the DHR, but I have to give him on the security, on the military, he's going to play ball with me. So maybe if I give him more information on the DHR and show him just how many people in his 4th Congressional District would like to vote for somebody who wants to work on some DHR changing in some policies, maybe that will influence him to be more proactive on some DHR policies. But he did not see that as a problem. It was not even on his radar until I introduced it to him.
That's good to hear that he's going to listen, and I'm pretty sure that he's going to get back with you and try to work something out.
Not only is he going to get back to me, Marcus, this is what he said. He told me to bring him the plan, what changes we wanted to see. So with that being said, Marcus, that means we get to write the plan because he doesn't want to. He said for me to bring him something. So you know what that means. We're fixing to get to work. And we need to write some legislation because the legislator asked me to bring him an idea. So that's what we're going to do.
Well, I look forward to doing that because there definitely needs to be some changes made. Now, tell me this right here. What's the worst thing that you've either seen or heard of when it comes to the vaccination? And that could be whether you were in the military or out.
Well, one of the things I want to speak about today. One of the storylines, and I have 5 minutes to speak, but if I can get in the fact that in 1971, the U.S. military used the flu vaccine by putting in more mercury and aluminum. They were doing an experiment in 1971 with the swine flu vaccine to induce the condition Guillain-Barré, I may be saying it wrong, but it's the Guillain-Barré, however you describe that word. That is a condition that is oftentimes compensated in the vaccine injury compensation fund due to a flu vaccine injury. Well, they discovered in 1971 by inoculating American soldiers with up to 3, 4, 5 times the amount of mercury and aluminum regular vaccines due to the bar in a human. So if I was to just point out something that is pretty tragic, I could go back to 1971, nearly 50 years ago, and say 50 years ago they were intentionally murdering us, intentionally using us as guinea pigs in the military so that they would know just how much aluminum and mercury they could put in these flu shots so that less people would get the Guillain-Barré than what was happening in the military. So if I was just to mention one thing, I would say that was pretty horrendous to knowingly and willingly give that kind of shot. And it was apparently catastrophic to those that received it. It was final for many, final service to your country for many.
Wow. What about, do you know of anybody that's using, and this might be a little bit off the subject of what you're talking about, do you know anybody that's using cannabis to treat some of these side effects of these vaccines, such as autism?
Yes, thananks so much you asked me that question. So when I did the interview with the vaccine back in September, I spoke about cannabis and cannabis oil use for reversing autism or treating of autism and vaccine injury. I am happy to report that at last night's dinner, when we had some of the volunteers that had put this together, three of those, and there was about 17 people that was there, so three of the 17 volunteers, two of which I knew because I'd met them in Atlanta, and the other woman I had just met her last night, three of those 17 of them to say thank you for letting us know about cannabis, because that they had started using cannabis oil in their children's lives and that it had made all the difference. One woman described how her child had not been speaking, had stopped speaking years ago, that her daily activity was to bang her head up against a wall until she made herself bleed. It's horrendous. It's horrible, Marcus, being with these families to see so up close what these vaccine injuries do. But I was so honored that those women hugged my neck and said thank you for talking about cannabis, because they looked into it and their children's lives is all better. It's not all better, but we have a child that's now speaking and hasn't spoken in years, and she hasn't banged her head against the wall in months. So that's just one family. I could tell you all of them, all of the stories, but I will just say this. I feel vindicated for my activism in cannabis. I feel vindicated against those people who spoke out against me for my activism for cannabis. I feel vindicated because now this child can speak to his mama, and he hasn't told his mama anything in years. So I feel vindicated that the Lord God was right when he created the endocannabinoid system and then gave us cannabis. I feel vindicated. And so these parents feel blessed because now they know that they have something that they can go to, and that's where they're going. They're going to cannabis. This movement is going to push these parents towards safer alternative treatments, and cannabis is one of the leading topics of conversation.
That's good, because I really think it could help with a lot of this. The first thing would be not to even use some of these vaccines. I'm gonna tell you something. This is no lie. I have never taken a flu vaccine ever, and I've never been sick with the flu no more than 3-4 days. You know, I can only last for 3 or 4 days. You know, drink me plenty of green tea and plenty of water and get plenty of rest. But I just refuse to take that flu vaccine, because every time I see somebody taking it, 2 or 3 months later, they're saying it's a different strain out. So we're just taking vaccines, trying to guess on which strain is going to come out. No, thank you.
Well, I want to let the public know something. Now, let me explain something to the public. When we are told come September that flu season is about to hit, I want people to understand that there has never, never been a season for a virus. Viruses do not work seasonally. This is not how it works. The reason why they advertise the flu season is because for many years they have put a lot of money towards a targeted campaign that educated us humans here that what we needed to do was take a flu shot come September, October, so that we wouldn't get the flu during the flu season. Once again, folks, I don't know that if you didn't know this, viruses aren't seasonal. The entire concept of the flu vaccine in the fall is a business marketing strategy to sell their product. And when flu cases spike during those months, can be directly attributed to the vaccination process of the flu vaccine, and then when the person receives their vaccine, they live shed the virus for up to 30 days, if not more. So you took a virus vaccine, and then you turned around and you gave it to grandma and your mama and your cousin and the gas attendant who came and helped you change the oil in your car. You gave it to all of these people. You shed the virus after receiving the vaccine, which is what sheds the virus so other people get sick. And then they tell us on the TV that you need your vaccine, you need your shot because it's flu season. All they're doing is marketing a product, making people sick with its product so that they can sell more of their product to make more people sick. Once again, there is no such thing as a season for viruses, folks. Do not believe that if that was the case, if there would be a seasonal virus for the stomach bug, there would be a seasonal virus for, I don't know, whatever virus you want to go with. You can't just have one virus is seasonal. All of the viruses would be seasonal. So therefore, the complicated business marketing strategy that they came up with was just to tell us to get our shots because it's flu season, and we believed it because it came from a guy in a white coat, and he looked like he knew what he was doing because he had MB in front of his name. Oh, that's called capitalism, and it's marketing, and it's selling your product. And it's no more than that. There's no flu season. There never was. There never was. It was always a lie. It was always a lie.
Just so they could sell worthless, dangerous vaccines.
Well, you sell the vaccine, you sell the flu mist, you got the Tamiflu, you got all of these items and products. And don't think Procter & Gamble is not excited. What does Procter & Gamble make? The tissue, the headache medicine, the sniffle medicine. Everybody's getting a little piece of the pie whenever you get sick with the flu, because you're going to probably want to go to the doctor. So now you've paid the doctor and the nurse. You're going to have to go to CVS to go get you some tissue and some antibacterial cream and some chicken noodle soup. They have created a way to make money for other folks so everybody gets a piece of the pie, even the funeral homes, because when some of those vaccines get so severe in that person and causes a death, you have to purchase a casket from the funeral home. You can't go buy your casket out of state. You can't get one shipped to you on Amazon because that's not how it works. So all the way down to even the funeral home and the crematorium, you have created money for the system. So I would look at it as a capitalistic way to influx, to get, you know, give a boost to the economy. You were not selling enough Kleenex tissue. You might want to go get a vaccine, but you can get sick, but you'll come to the store and buy your Kleenex tissue.
I mean, I've always wanted these people get these vaccines, like the flu vaccine, and then there's a different strain out. Okay, what effect is that having on me? That I got this. Do I need to go back and get another shot, or I just missed it this time? I mean, I never understood that. When they come out and tell you, well, this is not the right strain, do they be directing people back to go get another one?
As a matter of fact, you are correct. They will tell folks who got that shot in September, October, that they have, if they are not sick with the flu by January or December, January. I have heard folks tell me that they were told at their workplace to get a booster shot, so or from their doctor to get a booster shot because it's already been 3 months and you haven't got the flu. Obviously, the flu vaccine didn't work in you. You need to take another vaccine so you can catch the flu. And people, when this story that was just told to me, that I just said, you, when the man was telling me this story, I could see that, you know, he was embarrassed because they had talked him into taking a second flu vaccine because he hadn't gotten sick yet. He realized afterwards and while speaking to me how they had lied to him, how they had manipulated him, manipulated this man into taking a second vaccine shot just months after taking the first because he hadn't gotten sick yet. He did it. He now realizes he had made a mistake, but he realizes what he was telling me was the way that these people use their manipulative ways to talk us into doing something to harm ourselves. We're letting these people harm us. It's almost we're trying to commit suicide each time we walk into his office. We're attempting to commit suicide by allowing this person to give us something that we're going to ingest that's probably going to kill us.
Yeah, I damn sure don't want to invite the damn sickness with a flu shot. I'd rather fight it if it shows up.
Let me explain something else, folks. When you go step on a nail, a rusty nail, they're going to tell you you've got to have a what, Marcus? A tetanus shot. Okay, since the late 80s, early 90s, the tetanus shot has only been wrapped up in a second type shot, the DTP. So you're getting diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis at the exact same time when you go step on that nail. They're telling you you're getting a tetanus shot. All right, here's the deal about tetanus. When you get that tetanus vaccine, if you look at the insert paperwork and if you speak to the medical professionals who's done all this training, they will tell you when you take the vaccine after you stepped on a rusty nail, it takes 3 weeks for the body to create the what they call antibodies, which we were told means immunity. Now I understand that antibodies never meant immunity. It meant that you had been infected and that your body was trying to localize the virus infection with the response that we call antibody. It doesn't create an immunity. That your body was creating a cover over the infection of the virus. But they told you it was immunity. So with that being said, let's go back. So you take your tetanus shot. You just got to the ER, you stepped on a nail. They cleaned your foot out, you're fixing to go home. And if you were to ask the doctor, doc, how long does it take for my body to build these immunities so that this tetanus doesn't come and kill me? He's going to look you in the face and say 3 weeks. And then you're going to go home and go to your Google, and you're going to type in tetanus for Google, and you're going to find that if you are to come down with tetanus, that you are dead within a week because tetanus kills quickly. So why did that doctor give you a shot that takes 3 weeks to set up antibodies when if you get tetanus yourself, you're dead in a week? Think about that for a second, folks. Think about that. The doctor just told you that this shot was to protect you, yet he gave you a DTP shot that is known to be causing all these autisms and he's dangerous. The kids are dying. It is horrible. The DTP shot is a horrible, horrible shot. Yet he told you you needed it to protect you from tetanus, yet your body takes 3 weeks to make the antibodies, and if you got tetanus from that rusty nail, you'd be dead in a week. Why did he give you the shot, Marcus? Why?
One big damn experiment is all I can say.
Well, it's one big lie. And part of what we're here doing in Washington, D.C. is educating the legislators and the congressmen on the lie. So that's what we're here doing. We're educating on the lie. When I explained that to some people last night about how tetanus works, their mind was blown. And then they're looking at themselves thinking, well, why did the doctor tell me this? And I'll go walk away and go talk to someone else while I let them try to figure out why the doctor told you you had to have this shot. because that diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis shot is going to cause with you other problems. In 3 months, 6 months' time, you're going to go back to the doctor because you got a cough you can't get rid of. You got some stomach problems. You don't know what's going on. But you thought you were safe from the tetanus, not knowing that if you got tetanus from that rusty nail, which is difficult to get tetanus, folks. I wish tetanus works. Tetanus virus or the bacteria of tetanus will set up in a wound if there's no bleeding. If you step on a nail and you bleed blood in your shoe or your sock, the chances and likelihood of you getting tetanus is very low, minuscule, because your body ejected the bacteria from the wound. You bled. That means the body's bleeding activity is to remove those bacteria out from away from the wound. If you have an internal injury that doesn't bleed, like a stab wound, which I can't imagine wouldn't, then, yes, tetanus could conceivably set up. But what we know is normal behavior is how many tetanus deaths has happened in this country. It's not normal. It's difficult to catch tetanus. But it is not difficult to catch a reaction from that DTP shot. In fact, it's very easy to catch a reaction from the vaccine that would never have worked to protect you from tetanus, considering it takes 3 weeks to create the antibodies. And if you get sick with tetanus, you're dead within a week. So I hate to be the scientist here that tries to explain how all this works to the doctors and to the legislators, you know, because they're all important. They think they're smarter than us. So when I explain that to some of the representatives with Adam Holt and some of these other people, once again, their eyes just popped out of their head. They did not want to believe what I was saying. They could not, in their own minds, they couldn't possibly understand how their doctor had lied to them. So what we're going to have to do is educate the people and let the people wake up themselves and say, wait a minute, why are you giving me the shot? I don't have diphtheria. I don't have pertussis. And the doctor's going to say, well, this is how the shot's made up. Well, as I've educated before, each virus that they put into one shot, so this has three viruses, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. Each one of those viruses is made, the shot is made by two, three, or four more different animal, unlike proteins, combined together. So in one shot of diphtheria, let's just say three. So there's three animals on the diphtheria shot, there's three animals on the tetanus shot, and there's three animals on the pertussis. You just took a shot for a rusty nail and put nine different animals in your body in protein virus form. They use animals to code these proteins so that they code our DNA in our RNA. So when you think about it, you took a shot and you might as well have gone to the zoo and had sex with every animal there. Because you don't know, you injected the animals in you might as well go have sex with them.
Yeah, who? I mean, you, this is... animal protein injected to a human for a cure.
Correct. Well, that is how they create these viruses. They use aborted fetal cells to assist in the vaccines, but they use the animal proteins to code the virus. So it's very dangerous. There's no reason for little Timmy to go get a shot with some zebra blood. There's no reason for little Timmy to go have some green monkey kidney virus injected into him. There's no reason for Timmy to be running around with the swine flu vaccine in his body. There's no reason. There never was.
None. Hey, how would you like to wrap this up and just let you know everybody behind you and we keeping up with it and glad you're taking the Alabama Vax voice and the Alabama voice of all the issues, because I know you're up there, you're not going to miss an opportunity to fight for everything that we've been fighting for down here, and I know you're up there for that specific purpose, but I know you're going to spread the word and make
absolutely.
The next
Absolutely. I wish they'd give me an hour to speak and would give a great many different conversations in that speech. But what I'm trying to do today I'm a little bit limited on capital time because of the events. But what I tried to do yesterday with me and Terry LaPointe was to make contacts with as many people in Congress and in the Senate that we could for them to see my face, to shake my hand and understand where I'm coming from and what it is I'm here for. And I feel like I was very successful in that. Today, my goal is to give a rousing speech to the people here at the Marriott, and any government officials or any invitees that we bring. I hope to educate them with some new information that they did not have before so that they feel like they need to know more about the story, so that people will start looking deeper and asking more questions. So what I'm trying to do is do that, Marcus.